DePaul University. Here, we do what others don't, dream what others won't, driven to leap forward, determined to give back. Here, we ask what must be done, for in doing, we earn success. DePaul University. Here, we do.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Source Material Comics Podcast, episode 258. So I don't know if you noticed, Mark, but I promoted the most recent Source Material Comics Podcast with Fight Club 2, right? And for the second time in Source Material Comics Podcast history, I used a number twice. So there are two 256s out there. Either way, this is episode 258, and we're coming at you with a Mark, this is pretty timely, very timely. This comic book series ended December 18th, 2019, 12 issues, and it started 2 years ago.
One of the biggest
things you'll hear about Doomsday Clock, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that it was 12 issues and took completely 2 years to get done. So Mark, you know, this is Doomsday Clock. Jeff Johns, again, we're going back to the well with Jeff Johns. What a great writer, in my opinion.
Well, when he writes everything in the modern era for the last 20 years, it's hard not to do Jeff Johns stuff.
That's true. That's absolutely true. But why don't you let our listeners know as to why we're talking Doomsday Clock tonight?
Because we already did Watchmen a few years ago for Alan Moore Month. And this is how my brain works, everybody. Melissa's friend that brought me the potato skins on my wedding night, so I took her on as a second wife.
Wow, that's all it took.
It's really all it took. Things a fat guy says. For Christmas one year, she said, I guess she had inherited a couple of different graphic novels from whoever the hell she inherited them from. She's like, I'm not going to read this bullshit. So she sent them. So she's like, here, I believe my wife had gone out to Utah at the time where they were living. And she said, here, take these home for your husband. So one of which was, I believe, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Okay. All right.
And that inspired me. Like, we should do the movie and compare it to the comic.
Yes. This was a good podcast.
Hey, as it turns out, he's done this like three different other times where he wrote a comic. It got optioned for a movie and they were vastly different. And Alan Moore wanted to kill himself. We should explore this. So we dedicated an entire month, four podcasts, one a week, to Alan Moore. And we did the Watchmen series, the seminal Watchmen series by Alan Moore, and compared it to the garbage Zack Snyder movie. And then we compared his League of Extraordinary Gentlemen series to the garbage movie starring Sean Connery. And we did V for Vendetta and compared it to the garbage movie, V for Vendetta. There's a pattern here.
Garbage.
And then I fucking tapped out on From Hell.
Did we?
You guys did it. I think like you and Winfrey did it.
Oh, wow. Man, From Hell was, dude, that book. Oh, my gosh. The largest comic book I've ever read. It was like I had the library put it on hold for me, and then they called me and said, we have a delivery for you, sir. We got a semi truck. We're going to back it up to your house. I said, okay. And there it was, From Hell in all its glory.
This was well before I had the CPAP machine. So every time I tried to read that, I just like passed out and I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore.
It was tough. It was tough.
I know I planned this podcast, but you guys do it. So, but the reason why we're going back to the Watchmen well again is because of the HBO Watchmen series. We're going to be talking about it this week on a TV party, myself and Alexis Haina. So I thought, well, what other Watchmen material is out there? And as it turns out, contemporaneously, they've been doing this sort of soft crisis reboot, merging of universes, two pizzas thing with the DC universe and the Watchmen universe, which I believe started with The Button. Is that right?
I don't know, man. You could go all the way back to Rebirth I think in Rebirth, I don't know. You can see where Wally comes back. So everybody's trying to figure out why Wally West is back. At that point, Wally West was written out of history. Nobody knew where he went. No explanation as to why he's gone.
Yeah,
it's not like people are looking for him. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that was on purpose. They said, okay, well, we don't need this character right now. And then Rebirth happened. And I mean, I've listened to people talk about, people talked about that issue where Wally West came back and it moved them to tears because he was such an integral part of the universe prior to this. And he felt like, you know, he left a gaping hole in the continuity that we've been reading now. So when he come back, there was not much of an explanation as to why. It kind of led, this was all planned since Rebirth. If you want to say, I think this had been planned since that moment of return. Actually, I remember hearing all sorts of theories since that time. And it was a very, very slow burn. So yeah, here's the impetus. You know, you could go back to Rebirth and see all that happening. So let's just get something out of the way for anybody who's tuning into this, okay? Not being a person who understands all the continuity that's come before this, we know many other people who have a lot more experience in reading DC Comics and understanding where the continuity is at, where all these characters appeared here, there, and everywhere.
But as I said to you, continuity, schmontinuity. I should be able to pick up a book and outside of a few details, be able to follow the arc of a story from beginning to end if it's any good.
The point that we're making with that is that we're sitting down here, we're reading this story outright. And so to anybody out there that knows more about DC Comics than we do, that's great. We kind of expect that. So what we're going to do is we're most likely going to talk about the story. And, you know, if there is some stuff that we know, we're going to throw it out there. But, you know, we're going to look at this story as a whole and, you know, discuss it, what happens in it. So what we liked, what we didn't like, blah, blah, blah.
In defense of not reading the button, they do bring up the fact later in Doomsday Clock that when Rorschach threw Comedian out the window, I believe is what happened. Dr. Manhattan, and you know, and here's where they're kind of retconning what happens in the Watchmen movie. Dr. Manhattan shifts him into the DC universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Which then he will undo later.
I am so like, yes, sir, that's awesome. This is the kind of stuff that I really like. I like the intermingling of the universes, you know, bring one element into the other, which is what we get throughout this whole book. So that right there gets a positive mark, in my opinion, already for the book. Okay.
Yeah, but then they undo it and everything goes right back to normal again.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Okay. So, okay, just real quick.
Hey, let me, I'll give away the ending. Everything goes back to normal.
Okay.
Like, that's my biggest problem with this story.
I don't know if that's the case.
Is that at the end of it,
no.
the impression that I got was Dr. Manhattan's like, oh, Superman's a thing. I have hope again. Okay, back to my universe I go. Back goes the Comedian. Back goes all the players from... So he leaves Mime and Marionette for some odd reason, but then good fucks off back to the Watchmen universe and leaves the DC universe, and now they're two separate universes again.
I don't think the point of this book was to bring the two universes together.
No, I think that. Rorschach needed to be part of Justice League.
You are not irrational at all, sir. According to the wiki, Doomsday Clock is a 2017 to 2019 DC comic written by Jeff Johns and penciled by Gary Frank. Now, Gary Frank's a name I've heard before. Colorist, by the way, is Brad Anderson. Gary Frank, he started his career in 91, according to the wiki, doing covers and interior short stories for publications such as Doctor Who Magazine and Toxic. He's British, by the way, Mark Radlich. He is British. So there you go. There's your creative team. Now let's get down to the nitty gritty because we aren't going to be here all night, Mark Radlich. We're just going to talk. We're going to break things up a little bit here. Three sections, issues 1 through 4. You know, I'll kind of cover some of the big beats that happen in there. You speak up on whatever you want to. And then we'll do 5 through 8 and then 9 through 12. Yes. And this is a big story. I mean, this is a lot of stuff you have to unpack. Like Mark said, it'd be nice if we could pick up a book, understand where everything's at, but I knew going into this that most likely, just like any other DC event, it's going to include a lot of characters, which it sort of did. I mean, really, all in all, there's probably maybe 4 or 5 main characters out of this thing. But you did have to understand some of the DC history in order to get some of the, I wouldn't call them Easter eggs, but some of the references that, especially some of the story beats throughout. So issues 1, 2, 3, and 4. Issues 1 is titled The Annihilated Place. Issues 2 is called Places We Have Never Known. Issue 3 is called Not Victory Nor Defeat. And issue 4 is titled Walk on Water.
Doomsday Clock, 1 through 4. As the events of The Watchmen come to a completion, the world's smartest man, Ozymandias, orchestrated a plot to attempt to unite their world by creating a common alien enemy. However, in a world where society is beginning to collapse and the fear of nuclear war is about to be realized, the truth has also come out that this plot resulted in the deaths of scores of New Yorkers, and Ozymandias has been blamed. Now Ozymandias has a plan to try and make things right, enlisting a new version of Rorschach and a couple of ruthless criminals called the Mime and the Marionette. They steal the Owl Ship, and as the bombs begin to drop, they all cross a dimensional barrier and end up in the current DC universe, as the readers now know it. The world these four find themselves in now seems similar, as the public is in an uproar over something called the Superman Theory, which is based on the fact that 97% of the world's metahumans have ties to the United States federal government. But the main reason Ozymandias has brought them to this world is because this is where he believes the savior of their world came to, and they are searching for Dr. Manhattan. Splitting up, Rorschach heads to find Batman, and Ozymandias goes to find Lex Luthor in order to see if they can help. The two leave the criminals, the Mime and the Marionette, handcuffed in the Owl Ship, but they escape. While Ozymandias talks to Lex Luthor about trying to help out, a shot rings out, barely missing Ozymandias and hitting Lex. The potential assailant is a living and breathing comedian, the one hero that dies, setting events in motion in the Watchmen series. After learning that Dr. Manhattan saved the comedian to bring him to this universe, Ozymandias barely escapes his attacker, jumping out of a window and landing hard on a car. Meanwhile, Batman talks with Rorschach about what's going on. Rorschach gives him the original Rorschach's journal for reading, and the next morning, Batman tricks Rorschach into a cell at Arkham, closing the door. In issue 4, titled Walk on Water, we are given a look at the history of Reggie Long, the current Rorschach. The readers see that he is the son of Dr. Malcolm Long, the man treating the original Rorschach, and after the planned deaths in New York, among those deaths being his parents, Reggie's mind had snapped. Being instituted, he made friends with a man who called himself the Moth, who reveals that Reggie's father had actually was befriended by Rorschach. As a young man, Reggie was pushed around a lot, and now, in the confines of the sanitarium, he learns to fight back. Escaping, he planned on making Ozymandias pay for his sins. But once he confronts him, Reggie learns that Ozymandias has cancer, and that Ozymandias has a plan to make things right. Cutting to today, a young girl who has also been committed in Arkham helps him escape. When Reggie asks her name, she says she is called Saturn Girl.
What do you think of these first four issues? I mean, we got our introduction. You know, first issue is pretty much all Watchmen, and then them coming over, and then we have the big, you know, the big twist of comedian still alive. We have Rorschach and Batman meeting up.
I think there's a lot of fun to be had when this first starts. Mm-hmm. I think you have a fairly simple premise of it's kind of like Terminator, where they thought they stopped Skynet by killing the Terminator. Sarah Connor squished it in the machine. What they didn't know at the time was that a chip in her arm survived.
Yep.
And that would become the impetus to Skynet. Skynet doesn't take over when they say it does. It takes over later. They just delayed it. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing happens again in the second one. This time they kill all the Terminator, but it only puts Judgment Day off a few more years.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop it from happening. So same premise here. It's like poetry. It rhymes. the idea that Veidt, you know, said, unless we come up with an existential threat for the world to focus on instead of focusing on itself and each other and, you know, and playing into ongoing continual conflicts, we're going to keep having this problem where superpowers try to blow each other up.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, okay, well, let me, so he creates the squid, and for a while, that's what they are focused on. But time heals all wounds, and eventually people will fall back into predictable patterns, and it only puts off the doomsday clock. He never erases it from existence. He just sets it back a few hours.
Yeah.
So now it's 2 minutes to midnight once again, and Veidt's like, well, fuck. What am I going to do now? I can't do a squid again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, I've got to somehow convince Dr. Manhattan to come back. And they all think Dr. Manhattan is on Mars. But where Dr. Manhattan really went is to the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to go to the DC universe to get Dr. Manhattan and convince him that the world is worth saving, that he should be a hero, that he should have hope, and that he should stop, you know, he should stop the world from blowing itself up.
Yeah.
And that's what we're left with, I think, in the first four issues. And that's a lot right there. you know, I think the meeting of Rorschach and Batman, you know, Rorschach is kind of a parallel to Batman, you know, in the sense that, you know, Batman had no powers, Rorschach has no powers. They have that, you know, detective noir thing going on, both of them.
Yes.
So that's kind of a fun meeting. The mime and marionette thing.
Yeah, that's where I was going to ask you. I wanted to know what you thought of those two characters.
If you know that at some point you're going to have a face-off between mime and marionette and the Joker, they're a good invention. They're good to carry along in the story. They don't serve any immediate purpose or need to be there. It's kind of one of those where you kind of have to have patience and see where it takes you.
Remember when I messaged you and I said, I think somebody left a spoiler at the end of issue one, I think it was. It was about the mime and marionette, but the spoiler was completely, at least it was not realized in this. And I don't think it's part of DC, unless he's getting it from a different series or something. But supposedly, according to this motherfucker, the mime and marionette were his Joker's parents.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, shit. I thought, well, and then everything almost led up to like, oh, man, we're going to get a reveal. It's going to happen because you could see, just like you said, there was going to be a collision course between these two.
Like, slow down on the big reveals and like epic storytelling. We still haven't had a resolution to the three Jokers issue.
Mm, yeah. Like,
calm the fuck down already.
I have heard that this story is not DC canon.
Good night, Jesse. I'm going to bed. I can't even with this company.
I am not kidding you. So I have a link here. Because here's the thing, Mark.
You're gonna be talking to yourself in about a minute.
As we said earlier, we're not reading DC Comics currently. If you look at DC Comics at one point, Alfred was dead recently. He's not in this book. At one point, Alfred had a hook for a hand recently.
Is he fucking Aquaman?
He doesn't have one in this book. And a lot of this, they chalk up to the fact that, hey, this fucking series should have been done in 2018. But because the you know, continuity, current DC continuity had to continue, people just started doing whatever. So I'm looking at a Bleeding Cool. This is a Bleeding Cool article. This came out on December 2nd, 2019. So this is before the last issue of Doomsday Clock gets released.
Tell me what you're going to tell me, but then I have to explain why in my head right now I'm screaming I hate DC.
Well, this isn't going to make it any better. Are you ready? Scott Snyder. No,
I've already had a problem. There's a story I want to tell you about why I hate DC Comics.
Oh, okay.
That happened today.
Just today.
Check your emails for all the alerts on the schedule, and you'll understand why.
Oh, no.
But go ahead. Tell your story, and then I'll explain.
Well, I'll just read you the title of this article. And there might be some of this up later, but the title of said article is Scott Snyder, who was had a very great prominent run on Batman. Scott Snyder on making Doomsday Clock part of the DC universe again. Quote, that's our job. That's what we're trying to do. According to this article, these events occur in the future, a little bit into the future of DC Comics. Uh-huh. So that's their way of getting around saying, okay, well, Alfred's dead right now. Maybe we'll bring him back. You know, and any other continuity, you know, errors or mismatches that happened between this story and the last. So we're getting wrapped up in something that may not actually be continuity as of yet. So, all right. So tell me your story.
In February, Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, which I believe is like the first part of like a Harley Quinn trilogy or some shit. The next one being Gotham City Sirens. Get it? Like they're taking all the girl books and just throwing Harley Quinn in there.
Do it.
Comes out in February. So, you know, for the longest time, we were going to do the Gail Simone run, the first part of the Gail Simone run on Birds of Prey, which has nothing to do with Harley Quinn. And I've really struggled to come up with a book that reconciles the fact that this is, minus Batgirl, Oracle, the Birds of Prey lineup with the additions of Renee Montoya and Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm trying to find, and trying to find a book where people who, and I don't know why this matters to me so much, but people who, you know, might find our podcast by virtue of their interest in the movie, might be looking for us to, you know, to cover a Harley Quinn book. But there's no, like, Harley Quinn / Birds of Prey books out there. So I just said screw it at one point, because this is not the first time I've been through this exercise. I said, we'll just stick with Gail Simone. Like, let's just focus on good books and not worry so much about them meeting, like, total continuity with the movie. But I got bored at work today, and I was like, let me try again. Well, apparently, sometime last year, they announced that, sometime this past year, they announced that there was actually going to be, from Amanda Connor and somebody, Paul Mitri, whoever worked on the new 52 Harley Quinn book, that they were actually going to be doing a Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey book with the, with those two helming it. And I'm like, perfect. And it was initially announced to where at least a few issues would have been published before the movie. I'm like, okay, we can at least work on that. Then apparently that was done away with. And they were going to do a one-shot of Birds of Prey and Harley Quinn by Brian Azzarello. Then apparently that got done away with. So now we're back to this Birds of Prey book, but it's not coming out till fucking March.
Oh, they do not know what havoc they wreak upon the schedule.
I was so aggravated. I finally figured out something. There's a compilation book of like different stories featuring these characters.
Okay.
That will be compiled into one trade paperback, and we'll do that instead. I was screaming in my head at work today, why can't DC Comics get its shit together?
You know, well, like looking at this, so Doomsday Clock, we were talking about having problems being getting done on time, but then all of a sudden Geoff Johns is not CCO of DC Comics anymore. So obviously that threw things in, out of whack. And then they're saying here, Alfred died, Dick Grayson stopped being Nightwing, Lex Luthor became a god, all right? And then there was some of the things that happened later in this series, specifically some of the people that come back. Well, guess what? They came back, but there's some problems with versions of those characters matching up with what's in here. But this is clearly a...
Monkey's fucking a football?
This is a company... this is a project. Let's put it that way. I don't know about the company as a whole, but I'll say that Doomsday Clock as a project was something that needed a lot more direction than it got and needed a lot more supervision and a lot more help.
Is that they've gone out of their way to reset this universe so that there would be continuity people could follow and people could get on board and, you know, and get a hold of these books and read them consistently. And yet they can't help but, like, every time they start to get somewhere, just undo everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't, like, consistently follow their own continuity. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where the end of this book and the result of this book is to actually just say, hey, guys, we're not doing one continuity anymore. You know, we are going to have, and you can look at the stores, you can look at the store shelves right now and probably look at books that are following this model, which is we don't want to harden ourselves to a continuity. Or how about we don't want to conform ourselves to a hardened continuity.
Maybe then don't do giant crossovers.
Well, I'm telling you, I think that's the point of this book is to say, look, we don't just have 52 universes anymore. At one point, Mark, there was only 52. There was only 52 worlds. Now, at the end of this book, we have, it's just like Dr. Manhattan says, you know what? Actually, everything can exist.
Right. Until it does.
Everything.
until they want to simplify shit again.
Man, what's funny is we're talking about a book that finished up just recently in 2019 that opened up all sorts of universes as being canon now. So everything can be canon. Whatever you want to pull from this, that, and the other can influence your book. All right. I'm sure that that's going to get convoluted. But what's funny is back in 1985, in a book that we're going to be talking about pretty soon, the whole purpose of that book, Crisis on Infinite Earths, was to take all of the continuity and put it down into one. So we're working backwards here, which is funny. We're looking at a book that's opening everything up. And then soon we're going to be talking about a book that's near, well, it's close to 35 years old. And it was specifically done to try and truncate all that. About it. One of the things that I really just stuck out as hilarious to me was the fucking mime. The fact that, you know, I think Rorschach breaks him out, and the mime, who doesn't speak, okay, obviously, that he's got to live that gimmick, and his wife, girlfriend, whatever, Marionette, has to kind of speak for him, but she's like, he's got to go get his equipment, and so he goes to this fucking locker, opens up the locker, and Rorschach has watched him pull out like invisible weapons. I think he looks over at Marionette and goes, "You guys have issues." It's like,
are you shitting me?
Yeah. And then, of course, I think it's here in issue 3 or 4 where they show up at the Joker's bar, and that one guy's got the Marionette by the neck, and he pulls out he's pointing a fucking finger at the guy, and they're like, "Well, you gonna shoot us with your invisible gun?" And sure enough, he fucking shoots him with an invisible gun. I think that was an awesome payoff. I was like, "Oh fuck, sure, man, they're invisible." So anyway, I liked it. I liked it, Mark Radulich. All right, anything else out of the first four before we hit the next four?
No, I'm good.
All right, issues 5 through 8. Issue 5, There Is No God. Issue 6, Truly Laugh. Issue 7, Blind Spot. And issue 8, Save Humanity.
Doomsday Clock, issues 5 through 8. Escaping the hospital, Ozymandias runs right into Batman. As they both get into the Owl ship, they fly above a Gotham City that, like many cities, is besieged by protesters due to the Superman theory chaos. Ozymandias causes Batman to fall to the protesters below, who in turn beat him. Rorschach and Saturn Girl find an elderly resident at an old building who goes by the name Johnny Thunder. Johnny also found a small green lantern in the middle of the building. While trying to think of what the next move should be, Ozymandias finds him and they leave. Looking in on the mime and the marionette, we see they are out on the town of Gotham looking for some fun and find a bar that is run by some of Joker's goons. As they are taken prisoner, they meet up with the Joker, who also is given a present from his followers, a beaten Batman. Joker ends up taking them all to a meeting where many supervillains are planning to head to the nation of Kandak, as Black Adam has promised all metahumans sanctuary there. But as they discuss this, the comedian shows up and starts shooting villains. As the villains run, the comedian follows the mime and the marionette, and as he is about to kill them, the Joker shocks him, saving the pair. As they torture the comedian, Batman wakes up and fights them all. During the fight, Ozymandias appears with Rorschach, Johnny Thunder, and Saturn Girl. Using his special genetically bred cat to find traces of Dr. Manhattan, Ozymandias is finally able to use it to get his attention. When Dr. Manhattan appears, he isolates him and the others from his world, from Batman and the Joker. Ozymandias attempts to compel him to come back to their world to save things. However, Dr. Manhattan refuses, but not before revealing to Rorschach that Ozymandias has been lying about his cancer. Teleported back to where they left, Rorschach is now enraged and attacks Ozymandias and the Joker, pulling the mask off and claiming Rorschach is dead. Barely escaping, Ozymandias makes it back to the Owl ship and leaves, claiming he has another plan that does not involve Dr. Manhattan. Through these issues, we see Dr. Manhattan reflect on the changes he has made to the DC Universe, specifically moving a famous Green Lantern out of the reach of Alan Scott when he first found it, causing significant changes in this universe, most notably the absence of the Justice Society of America. Also, Dr. Manhattan looks a month into the future and cannot see past the moment where Superman punches him and wonders if he ends existence or does Superman end his. In issue 8, titled Save Humanity, the world's unrest regarding the Superman theory comes to a climax. Upset about rumors he was created by the government, Firestorm confronts a group of heroes in Russia. When he falls to the ground, seemingly without his powers, a mob of protesters descend on him. Lashing out, a powerful wave emanates from his body, and he turns the mob into glass. Horrified, he leaves, and Superman attempts to find him. When he does, he finds Firestorm attempting to turn a young child from glass into his original state. Failing over and over, as his powers were never able to affect organic matter before, Superman tells him he believes he can do it, and finally, Firestorm does. Superman then drops in on a Russian press conference to try and calm things down. However, when the people believe he is there to try and dissuade the accusations of the Superman theory, the people begin to get angry. Then, when Firestorm appears to try and reverse what he did, the Russian military and heroes begin to attack. When bullets start to strike the glass figures that were once people, Firestorm becomes upset, and before Superman can stop him, a large detonation occurs with Firestorm at the center.
So, okay. So the big thing I pulled out of issue five was the Superman theory, the Supermen theory, which was the backbone of the unrest that's kind of mirroring the Watchmen universe in the DC universe. So the theory is that 97% of metahumans, which is pretty much what they call all people with superpowers over there, 97% of metahumans are tied to the United States government.
They were created in the United States.
Oh, they were created in the United States. I thought they were tied to like
This part I got.
Okay.
The Superman theory is that 98% of the metahumans in the world came from the United States. So therefore, they must be a government creation.
Oh, okay.
And that these are actually weapons that the United States government created for world domination.
It was a cool premise for that's social really unrest. Cool. I liked it.
That's fucking amazing.
Now the United States are kind of looked upon as being villains because they're, you know, creating these heroes in order to influence other worlds. And then we have Black Adam, who shows up and he's like, hey, everybody, I know you're pissed off at the United States and all metahumans, but look, if metahumans, which is crazy because all the metahumans are kind of like scared that the public is turning against them. You don't just have superheroes who are kind of fighting for their name and saying, oh, what the fuck are you talking about? I wasn't created by the government. You also have villains who are doing the same thing, and they're trying to figure out where to go. And Black Adam's like, hey, why don't you guys come to Kondak? We welcome y'all here. Now, Black Adam has had some of the more, I don't know what you'd say.
He goes on a rampage during 52, doesn't
52,
he?
52, yes. It's 52 where he has, I remember reading that. So he's not... You know, he's never been like the kind of guy that you can trust. You know, Black Adam is saying, hey, we've got refuge. All you have to do is come over here and then we'll figure out what to do next. So I like the metahuman paranoia. I like the Superman theory. I thought that was really cool. Issue six, we have a look at the backstory about the mime and marionette. I think we needed that. Obviously, we want to flesh those characters out more, which is fine. And then the comedian shows up at the Joker when the Joker is with the mime and marionette with all the rest of those villains. So the comedian is still jumping in and fooling things. And even though we don't know where the hell he came from, he's still a part of this story. Issue seven is Blind Spot, which was really cool. All right. This was where we finally get our first look at Dr. Manhattan in the book. Ozymandias is using, he bred this, whatever his cat was from the Watchmen series, apparently can home in on Dr. Manhattan. We start to realize that this is what led him to Lex Luthor in the first place, I believe, because the comedian was there. And so this thing's basically, you know, kind of geared to try and find anything that Dr. Manhattan's touched. And apparently is able to coax him out as well. So he, I guess you would say, summons Dr. Manhattan, if you can call it that. I think Dr. Manhattan does whatever the fuck he pleases, but he shows up and we finally get our look and he talks about what he did. I think this is where he talked about, oh my goodness. Well, he separates himself and from the rest of the, he separates his people from his Earth, from Batman and Joker, takes them and teleports them somewhere. And Ozymandias is like, look, man, you've got to come back. You've got to come back. You've got to help us. You got to save our world. And Dr. Manhattan is like, no, thanks. And we kind of, I think we learn here, it's either in this issue or another issue down the road, but we learned Dr. Manhattan came to the DC universe because he saw people that were like him. There were a lot of superpowered heroes here. So he thought he could maybe find a way to fit in. So he's not interested at all in going back and doing anything with the Watchmen universe. All right. So there's issues 5, 6, and 7 and issue 8. Mark, I told you on the phone. I called you up. So Mark Radulich, I don't know how I got your number. I've got it in my phone, I'm sure. But anyway, I sent you a message. I sent you a message and I said, issue 8 was awesome. Now, do you feel the same way that I did? This is the issue where Firestorm shows up and it gets into it with the Russian superheroes.
Oh, and he turns all the Russians into glass.
Yes.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
This is the issue called Save Humanity. Firestorm shows up in the middle of, who? Well, fucking Firestorm. He shows up and he's getting into it with these Russian heroes. He gets hit with something. He falls down and there's already protests, which I believe are still, they're still going on over in Russia, even about the Superman theory. Falls down and in a panic, he can't use his powers. They're not coming to him. And then all of a sudden he lashes out and he changes this whole mob into glass. And he's horrified. He can't believe he did it. And of course, the Russian people, along with the heroes themselves, believe that, you know, Firestorm has committed an atrocious act. So he leaves immediately. And Superman, getting wind of this, is like, oh, fuck, you know, we've got to get over there and see what's going on. So he immediately flies over there. He finds Firestorm. You know, nobody can find him, but he is able to find Firestorm. While he's in this bunker and he's got this little glass child and he's trying to change him back and he can't do it. Now, Mark, I'm going to tell you, this scene where he's talking to Firestorm, it almost came off as hokey to me, but then I realized what the point of it was. It was to just kind of give you that foreshadowing and kind of, you know, just build upon the fact that Superman is the beacon of hope in the DC universe. So he is talking to Firestorm. He's like, look, you've done it before. You can do this again. And the only thing that kind of gets him through that is Superman's support. Sure enough, Firestorm's able to change this kid back. The next step is, okay, we've got to turn the rest of the Russians that were turned into glass back into people. And then we'll figure out what's going on after that. But before they can do that, there's a press conference going on, and Superman shows up at the press conference to try and ease tensions, number one, and then obviously work his way up to, into bringing Firestorm back so he can get this shit fixed. And it does not go that way at all. It does not go that way. I don't want to give much more away. I want to get your thoughts here. What are your thoughts on these four issues?
So I have to tell you, I was less interested in like Ozymandias trying to recruit Dr. Manhattan to come back as I was in this sort of parallel situation where the DC universe is also 2 minutes to midnight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are, everything was like balanced on the edge of a knife in terms of, you know, if the heroes in the US went too far, then the Russians were going to respond. And now it's not a nuclear arms race, it's a Superman arms race. And I like that idea. I don't know how I feel about Superman being a beacon of hope. I think that plays into what a lot of fans want.
Ooh.
I think they see Superman as, you know, this, to pattern this after, you know, Zack Snyder's thoughts, you know, like Christ figure.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with Superman when, you know, he's beaten up all the villains? You got to find something interesting for him. So I think sort of framing him as next to godliness, you know, that he's a Christ figure, that he's a beacon of hope, and not just, you know, an overpowered super guy in blue tights, I think is interesting. I'm not really interested in it, but I think it feeds a lot of what fans want. I don't want to drag this back into Star Wars, but I think it's like that Luke Skywalker thing. It's like, we see Superman, we see Luke Skywalker as heroes, so we want them to be, we want them to be above us, and we want them to be super heroic and something to look up to. And so I think the writers were giving the fans what they wanted with that interpretation of Superman. I don't think it's that interesting, personally. But, you know, I'm not the only one reading this book. So I kind of get it. And I think when the overall point of the story is that you have to have a character for Dr. Manhattan who's more powerful than Superman to look up to and, you know, and find hope again. I mean, like, who's he going to go to? Hal Jordan? Batman? Barry? Yeah.
Well, I hear you.
You know, I think in 10 more years, if they rewrite this story, it'll be Wonder Woman just because she's a girl.
Oh, boy. Societal commentary. Oh, my.
I thought the, you know, Firestorm being like almost like persecuted by the Russian superheroes to the point where he fucks up and then it's like, you know, like, you're going to fuck up. And then he fucks up. He's like, he fucked up. See, the prophecy came true.
Society is facing, you know, what do you believe in? What right. can you believe in? Superman is something that everybody should be able to believe in. But then all of a sudden, this shit goes down in Russia. What does Batman say when he flies
don't
in?
Don't get involved.
Don't pick a side. Right. Do not pick a side. And
because as soon as he does,
yep.
Then now he's framed as the aggressor. Now suddenly the United States has not just one atom bomb, but has like a neutron bomb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever the biggest, most destructive bomb you could possibly think of, they've got it.
Yep.
So, you know, now they have to retaliate. This is the arms race. Like, I don't know how well you know your Cold War, but it was essentially if the United States builds a nuke, builds an ICBM, Russia builds an ICBM, the Soviet Union, rather. And suddenly, like, the U.S. gets entangled in Vietnam, the Soviet Union gets entangled in Afghanistan. And, you know, and it's just like, there's a lot of tit for tat. There's a lot of, like, we do a thing, you do a thing, you know. And it's just, suddenly you've got this massive amount of armaments pointed at each other. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but we actually came close to having World War III. It was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Duh.
Oh, yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah, apparently it was like, get your missiles out of fucking Cuba, or we're gonna nuke fucking Moscow. Yeah, we came very, very close to total mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
And that's what the comic is dealing with, which is funny because we don't really, that's not like a contemporary issue at this point. I mean, a lot of what Doomsday Clock deals with, I think you can frame as a contemporary issue. But mutually assured destruction in an arms race is not really it. Like, we're not so much worried about a superpower. I mean, like, the world's big, the other challenging big superpower right now is China. But we're not totally worried about them mounting a land invasion in the United States.
Yeah.
We're worried that some guy's gonna, like, build a fucking bomb made of, like, orange juice and potatoes.
Yeah.
And fucking throw himself into the nearest Ed Hardy and blow people up. So I thought it was an odd thing to point to, but I think they needed like a parallel for what was going on in the Watchmen universe, which at the time that it was written was dealing with the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all very interesting. And I like the fact that Superman's a big dope and falls for it and fucks up. And now he's public enemy number one.
When I read the words of Batman, you know, do not pick a side. Do not pick a side, I think, is what he yells.
But I think he was just trying to save his friend.
And true.
Like, he wasn't so much picking a side as he was like, hey, if we just let him, surely he won't turn more people into glass.
Well, I think a lot of what the main thing I took from it was that he was trying to get Clark not to pick a side, because as soon as you do, you become part of whatever war there is. So let me just take this back, and we won't even talk about nuclear weapons. We'll talk about Facebook, which is a fun topic as always.
Sure.
So how many times have you sat and read something on Facebook and you just about type something out, and then you realize, okay, there's no need for me to even get involved. If I pick a side, it's just going to get worse. There's not even
in the past that's been a problem. It's not anymore. I refuse to engage with people.
You have decided not to engage. Now, Batman is, we can make a case that Batman's a pretty smart dude. Batman's not on Facebook, all right, and enjoying some fun conversation with people, spirited debates, we would say. I think he's a smart enough dude to understand that as soon as you pick a side, the public, somebody's going to see what you stand for. And somebody's going, or they don't even know what you stand for. They may not even know what you stand for.
They don't care what you stand for.
Exactly.
They just want to tell you that you're wrong.
Exactly. So I think that that's what's going on here, is Batman's like, as soon as he makes a decision to pick a side, then they can warp it to whatever agenda or narrative they want to try to spin. There's news reports. Oh, you know, is Superman a terrorist? You know, he's, and of course the picture is Superman throwing that tank. When all he's trying to do is fucking survive, you know, he's trying to at least stop the military from attacking and killing these innocent glass civilians.
You know, that's the sort of thing that happens in the news all the time, right? And then, you know, in the comic books, we saw that with the way Spider-Man was handled. Mm-hmm. You know, Spider-Man beats up some muggers and saves somebody from having their purse snatched. Headline reads, Spider-Man menaces three teenage boys.
Yeah, exactly.
And if this were modern times, it was Spider-Man racist, beats up three black kids.
Yeah. All that to say, I think issue 8 is a very important issue, because, I mean, at the end of that, after all that is said and done, as Batman's trying to warn him not to pick a side, and oh, by the way, it's not Firestorm. Firestorm, who, you know, he flies back down there, tries to at least show that he's there to turn all these people back into humans, and then the fucking military starts firing on them, and they start, you know, shattering these people. Firestorm appears to lose his shit, and I remember being on pins and needles as to what issue 9 was going to bring, because an explosion happens in fucking wherever they were at. I think it was Moscow, but wherever they were at, and I assume the president didn't make it out of there. The president of Russia is dead, and however many thousands of people were around that explosion. So yeah, that's where we kind of leave issue 8. Superman's left in a coma. Firestorm has disappeared, and there has been a huge detonation in Russia, killing scores of thousands of people. Again, mirroring the Watchmen universe a little bit there.
You almost don't need the Watchmen part of this, though. I mean, like, the story of, you know, Superman being undone by media and paranoia is like a story in and of itself.
Yes. And that's why I think this one, this issue, and that whole Superman theory, political unrest, societal unrest story was, just like you said, that's kind of like the more compelling part of this. We don't need the Watchmen stuff. We don't need to know what Ozymandias is doing. This is actually compelling.
Can I say, like, the other side of this, though, is you live in a world, Jesse, we're in Langford, Ohio.
That's right.
Where you're outside. It's a nice summer day. You're in your shorts and your tank top. Kids are riding bikes, you know, in the street, playing basketball, whatever. Just a perfect day. You're out on your front lawn, watering your grass, just standing there.
In my underwear.
With your hose in your hand, spreading your fluid all over the grass.
My essence is going everywhere.
Your essence is everywhere. And suddenly, two hulked up motherfuckers start throwing each other hither and thither around your block.
Mm-hmm.
Now your kids are in danger. Now, granted, one of them is trying to do some sort of nefarious deed. The other one's trying to stop him. But in doing so, they smash up your car.
Yep.
Okay? And they smash up your neighbor's house. And one of the kids that was just playing outside is suddenly injured in, you know, like falling debris. You realize that the greater good is that somebody who could have caused a lot more problems than all of that was dealt with. And you're grateful for it. On the other hand, they caused untold amount of destruction and harm and, like, traumatized your family.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much after that for people to, when it happens, especially repeatedly, for years. It doesn't take much for people to believe, to be made to believe. Like, they don't need that much of a push to get to superheroes are bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at, like, the gun situation in this country. When you think about the amount of people, the amount of open, and I swear to God, I'm not getting into, like, a pro or con gun debate here. I'm just, this is the reality of it. When you think about how open our society is and the availability of guns, and we only have maybe one shooting a day, one mass shooting, if that.
Mm-hmm.
This is potentially how much more, many more shootings there could be. How many more gun deaths there could be, given the amount of guns available and the amount of open society that we have. It doesn't take a whole lot for people then to get pushed to guns are bad, take everyone's guns.
Mm-hmm.
When the whole purpose of having the guns is in case the government ever turns on you, you can defend yourself. Now, there's the whole Jim Jeffries thing of, yes, but they have drones. You're bringing a gun to a drone fight.
They fly over, from what I understand.
They do fly over, yes. And so I'm not here to pick a side in that debate. What I'm saying is that the Superman thing comes from the fact that it doesn't take much for people to be led to believe that people who, for all intents and purposes, are trying to do good are really a bad thing. It doesn't take much for people to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Just like it doesn't take much for people to believe that guns inherently are bad.
Yeah.
Do you see the parallel?
Absolutely.
By the way, it's also this that made Civil War such a great story.
Mm.
Because it takes up all those things I was just talking about. You know, the concept of living weapons and regulation versus deregulation, and what we're supposed to do with this, and how this, you know, and what is the greater good. That's what made Civil War such a great story.
Yeah. That was a long, long, fun discussion about issue 8 and the stuff that happens in it. Let's talk about 9 through 12, and then we'll get into our final thoughts. So, yeah, we're going to get to our, you know, our conclusion here. Issue 9 is titled, our favorite word, crisis. Issue 10 is called Action, and issue 11 is called A Lifelong Mistake, and issue 12 is called Discouraged of Man.
Doomsday Clock, issues 9 through 12. The after effects of the events in Russia leave a world outraged at Superman's actions, which potentially show him siding with the U.S. government and trying to defend the actions of Firestorm, who, after the explosion, is considered a mass murderer. The explosion leaves Superman in a coma and Firestorm missing. Tensions continue to rise as many of the world's heroes have gotten into spaceships and left Earth, apparently heading for Mars. However, during the time of the Russian conference, Batman was speeding towards Moscow to try to warn Superman that nothing is as it seems, but was too late. Batman is also aware it was not Firestorm that caused the explosion, but someone else that is playing them all. When he awakes after the explosion, he attempts to send a message to all of the heroes before they reach Mars because the perpetrator is not Dr. Manhattan. Unfortunately, the message does not reach them in time. All of the heroes reach Dr. Manhattan, and their battle is futile. Manhattan also shows Firestorm, who was rescued and placed on the ship, that it was Dr. Stein's vision to create Firestorm as an engineered accident. In issue 10, titled Action, Dr. Manhattan is reflecting on the multiverse and the metaverse, examining worlds with and without Superman, sometimes by his own design, reboots and retcons, but one thing stands firm, it all seems to revolve around Superman. But what he also discovers is that when he manipulated the metaverse fought back, a la the reappearance of Wally West. Now events are set in motion that make Dr. Manhattan see that he is a being of inaction on a collision course with a man of action. Meanwhile, Lex Luthor confides in Lois Lane that there is something undermining their universe. Some evidence he provides is a video of the Justice Society of America, a group of heroes that Lois knows never existed. He also shows her that a certain photograph that has some chronal anomalies attached to it has been left at various places across the world, all places and times that Dr. Manhattan has visited. The final two issues see Ozymandias make Saturn Girl realize she was never a part of this reality, and when she does, she begins to disappear. Wonder Woman also tries to bring peace to the potential outbreak of war, but is soon attacked by Black Adam and his followers. And soon after, during the battle, she is whisked away by her fellow Amazonians. Waking up, Superman immediately confronts Black Adam and all the metahumans that blame him for the events in Russia. During the battle, Dr. Manhattan appears, telling Superman that he had a hand in much of what has happened to him, specifically the death of his parents. Superman appears to try and punch him. Dr. Manhattan is surprised to find he is not actually hit. Superman was aiming for a villain behind him. Superman explains that he may not understand what is going on, but Dr. Manhattan will need to make a choice instead of doing nothing. When Superman asks him about the people in the photo, Dr. Manhattan realizes the words of Superman carry more weight, and finally, Dr. Manhattan takes action. With Superman's call to action and a better understanding of the metaverse, Dr. Manhattan begins to influence events throughout DC's history, bringing back Alan Scott in the JSA, bringing back the Legion of Superheroes, all of Superman's friends who have not been part of this universe for quite some time, and they reappear to fight alongside of him, helping defeat Black Adam and the rest of those fighting against Superman. At the end of the book, we learn that Reggie, the new Rorschach, came to terms with being who he was, as Batman convinces him that he can change what the mask means to him and everyone else. Batman confronts Ozymandias, and he learns the resolution between Superman and Dr. Manhattan was Ozymandias' plan all along. However, the comedian arrives and shoots Ozymandias, but is soon sent back to his own world just at that time that he left, by a technically modified gun wielded by Lex Luthor. Ozymandias is content to die a hero as he feels he accomplished exactly what he set out to do. The rest of the book is best summed up by CBR.com. With that, Manhattan returns to his own universe and apparently makes every nuclear weapon in the world disappear. While he leaves Mime, Marionette, and their unborn daughter in the DC universe, Manhattan takes the couple's son as the eventual heir to his omnipotent power before he changes his own history to avoid the accident that transformed him, instead living out a happy domestic life with Janie. The final moments of the series return to Watchmen's world, specifically the marital home of the now-retired Night Owl and Silk Spectre. The couple are living under pseudonyms reflecting Dan Dreeberg's inspiration, Mason Hollis, and with a daughter of their own. As they are learning of the mysterious force that removed all the nuclear weapons from their Earth, they are greeted by a young boy with Manhattan's symbol on his forehead, introducing himself as Clark.
Out of those four issues, obviously the final issue holds the most weight for me. I'll talk about that here in a second. But some of the big beats that happen out of these four issues we learn that Firestorm, which I think this is either a retcon or just a revelation, one or the other, but Firestorm was actually created by the government. So yes, Ronnie Raymond finds out that Dr. Stein did in fact, what did I put it? It was a engineered accident, I think is what as how I put it in my synopsis. And that's what caused Firestorm to be created. But Firestorm still, he is alive and well, even though he was missing. He wakes up on a ship as all of the superheroes are heading to Mars to kick some Dr. Manhattan ass.
and their life on Mars.
I want to stop right here real quick. What'd you think of the battle between the heroes and Dr. Manhattan?
We're running out of ideas. How about some splash pages? Okay.
Really? You didn't think? I thought it was, it was hilarious. They all show up there. And of course, hot-headed Guy Gardner has to get the first shot in.
How punches, does Guy Gardner still have a ring, by the way?
I don't know, man. He fucking punches Dr. Manhattan supposedly so hard that he breaks his fucking neck. Okay, and he's like, oh, shit. Well, didn't mean to do that, but, I guess we can go back home now. It's like, dude, okay. I know Guy Gardner's been rough around the edges for a while, but straight up legit punching a guy and killing him and then not like feeling regret for it. I don't know
if that the Green Lantern were supposed to be the best amongst us, because how the fuck does this mushroom fucking head
first off, how do you keep that fucking haircut for that long?
Yeah, really.
You gotta come on.
And his leather Green Lantern jacket.
Or did you like the way that he was kind of like looking at I think at one point he grabs a Green Lantern ring and crushes it. He takes magic and he's like, oh, magic, look at that.
I thought that was great. I like that part. Yeah. You know, here's my problem with a bunch of heroes all attacking Dr. Manhattan. Dr. Manhattan is God. He can do anything. He could have snapped his fingers and they would have been dusted.
I don't know if they know that going in. They know he's powerful.
Obviously, I know that.
You know that, but our heroes may not. I mean, obviously they don't, because Justice League Dark is like, let's see how he deals with this. Which I thought, oh man, this might go ahead.
But that's my point. Like, there's no tension in the scene when you know that attacking a god is going to be pointless. He's going to do whatever you let him do. Like, at least Superman can be felled by kryptonite or a giant bone monster who hits hard.
Doomsday.
Giant bone monster. At that point, I'm reading to see what happens next, not because I think there's no tension there. Like, whatever happens is whatever the writers concoct to happen, which I guess you can say with any bit of a story, but at least some stories follow an internal logic to where you can't just be, and then a thing happened, and then a piano fell out of the sky. Like, no pianos fell out of the sky during Little Women. And a dog chased all the cats in the movie Cats. No, there were no dogs and cats.
Wow, I didn't know that. The big buildup to this issue is Dr. Manhattan looking 1 month into the future. I should say this series. He looks 1 month into the future and he sees Superman, who is clearly enraged. And the last thing that he sees, he can't see anything past this point, is Superman's fist coming to his face. And the question is, he goes, do I end all of existence or does Superman end my existence? That's kind of what we're building to. We know that at some point that's going to happen. Superman and Dr. Manhattan are going to face off. And of course, that does happen. What ends up going down, though, is Superman is in the midst of a battle. And he's by his lonesome because all of the heroes are on Mars, basically picking up their own asses after them being handed back to them by Dr. Manhattan. And Wonder Woman was on planet, but the Amazonians came and got her. All right. So Superman is all by himself and he's facing the likes of Black Adam and all of the other super metahumans of other nations that are clearly upset with what happened in Russia. So as he's fighting all these metahumans, Dr. Manhattan shows up. And this is where Dr. Manhattan makes his speech. He says, I want you to understand, I was the one that I manipulated a lot of things. Mark, you. you've said it before, I was the author of all your pain, as I've heard you say in the past. This is apparently a James Bond film that I haven't watched.
Yes, as the author of all your pain, James.
So that is kind of what Dr. Manhattan lays out there. And what we also learn is that at one point, Dr. Manhattan, you learn, has had his hand throughout the DC universe as we see it now by manipulating things around Superman, specifically the Alan Scott origin. Alan Scott, I think, is about to die on a train. He reaches up and he grabs a Green Lantern and it becomes the Green Lantern of the 30s or 40s, whatever it was. Well, Dr. Manhattan went back in time and moved that lantern 6 inches out of his reach. So the Justice Society of America, Green Lantern of that era, does not exist. Superman, in this universe, apparently his parents were killed in an accident when he was going to prom, I believe, or some kind of high school dance, while he was at a high school dance. And we find out that those were events orchestrated by Dr. Manhattan. And Dr. Manhattan lets Superman know this. So that's how Superman apparently gets so enraged that we believe that that's what's going to happen, that he's going to punch Dr. Manhattan's lights out. But that is not the case. As a matter of fact, he's aiming for the bad guy behind Dr. Manhattan, and he punches that guy out. And then Superman says, I don't know what the hell is going on, but you need to make a choice. You need to help me right now. I need help. Do something. Help me out. I don't want to go any further there. I just want to get your thoughts, and then we're going to wrap this up. You know, the events come to pass where Superman does not punch Dr. Manhattan, and we have the exchange between Dr. Manhattan and Superman about making a choice and doing something. Did that have much of an impact on you at all, or what were your thoughts?
Okay. I think, you know, I kept thinking about Doom Patrol. Okay. While I was reading this, and I kept thinking about, was it Mr. Nobody? Whoever the villain was. And now we get to the punchy part. And it's like, they do, because they have to resolve the punch. But the punch is Superman, like, hitting one of Black... See, that was actually my favorite part of this whole ending, was that Black Adam the whole time is like, come here, you'll be safe here. You know, and then all the heroes go off-world and they're stuck there for a while. He's like, now is my chance! I was lying the whole time! Ha-ha!
Yeah, he said he was making a move.
And this is why good will never win over evil, because good is dumb. I thought that was the best part of the book. Like, that's such a Black Adam thing to do. And so, like, Superman's now alone facing Black Adam's super army.
Yeah.
Which is what forces him to be like, hey, you know, like, look,
he's getting his ass handed to him. He's getting kicked. He's getting his ass kicked.
You know, he says to Dr. Manhattan, it's like, if you ever wanted to be a hero, now's as good a time as any.
Mm-hmm.
And here is where we get the resolution of Dr. Manhattan basically saying, like, I needed, you know, after everything that happened in my bleak, cynical world, I needed something to believe in. I need someone to believe in. I needed someone who was above God, Jesse. Another God, I guess. God of gods. And it just kind of goes on like that, doesn't it? You know, if Dr. Manhattan is looking for someone or something to believe in, why not be Superman? And Superman inspires him, and he, if I remember correctly, they save the day.
Dr. Manhattan, who knows that Superman is quite the cog in the universe here.
Mm-hmm.
He understands that. So what he realizes is that he needs to go back and set some things right. He goes back and he puts the lantern back in the hands of Alan Scott, which causes the JSA to become something. He also whatever he needs to, for continuity's sake, to bring the Legion of Superheroes back into play. Right. So when that all happens, all of a sudden Superman's no longer alone. You know, 50 superheroes are at his side. The Justice Society. I wish I had some clue as to who all these superheroes were. I just know that there are a lot of people that didn't exist in this universe at one point are now at Superman's side.
It was Alan Scott's Green Lantern and the Flash and
Jake Eric. Yeah, that's
and Panther Guy and Sal.
These were all people that weren't there before, and because...
And Bobby Two-Fists, and...
Bibbo the Clown.
Sandwich Frank.
Samwise Gamgee. What the fuck is he doing there? Holy shit.
Oh my God, it's the Lord of the Rings universe.
It's all canon now, baby. It's all DC canon.
He is joined, I remember now, by the Legion of Superheroes and the Justice Society. and they take out the bad guys and they save the day. And Dr. Manhattan says, I have been inspired. And so he goes back to the Watchmen universe and poof, the Doomsday Clock is turned back because he got rid of all the nukes.
Okay. Yes, I am inspired. He talks about how, you know, all of these interesting Earths are now back into continuity or canon, however you want to say it. They don't necessarily not exist. They just exist separate from each other. And so it gives everybody, Mark, do you want to compare this to Star Wars? It makes everybody fucking happy yet again.
Sure.
This is, I think you said this last night, if I remember right. This is something that, you know, this was a writer's plan on trying to at least satiate everybody, trying to stop people from being so mad.
Yeah. So here's my overall thoughts on Doomsday Clock.
Let's hear it.
It's a little convoluted. This feels like it was two stories. Like, there was how it started, and then somewhere along the line an editorial decision was made, and it went in a different direction. I just get the sense that this wasn't the plan from the beginning.
Okay.
And that it got tied up nicely, and I think I think there's a lot of it that's very fan-friendly. By the way, my other really fun part of this is Dr. Manhattan and the Joker. God's sake, put on some clothes. Oh, yes,
put on some clothes. Yeah.
That was great. I had a good laugh at that. So here, the good, the bad, and the ugly of Doomsday Clock. The art's very good. I think the message in it, ultimately, you know, of seek out a higher power, have something to believe in. It will anchor you. It will give you purpose. Those are nice messages. I think those are helpful messages for people. The iconography of Superman being a symbol of hope, I think, is very fan service friendly, even though it's not particularly appealing to me. But what the fuck do I know? I'm very cynical. There's, you know, fan service friendly moments like Batman and Rorschach, even though it's not the good Rorschach, things like that. The comedian being back, and then ultimately his fate being set right and him being properly dropped off the building. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Rapist there, that he was.
There's something that was said about Ozymandias as well, finding a hero's death in this book, which is good.
Yeah, I think a lot of it. I see. My only problem with this is I feel like the one person who really loses out in this story is Alan Moore.
Well, we talked about this last night, and I know we have differing thoughts on what Alan Moore would. Actually, he probably wouldn't give a shit about the story.
Alan Moore, I'm pretty sure, wishes he never got into comics at this point. You know, I just feel like Alan Moore set out to say something about the nature of man with his Watchmen comic and took the tropes of the superhero and turned them on its head and examined them from a different light. And what Doomsday Clock does, what Doomsday Clock does basically is say, sure, you can look at it from a negative point of view and you can examine it in a very cynical light, but isn't it much better to hold these iconic figures high and enjoy them as a positive thing? And it's like, you know, it's kind of like what we were talking about with Fight Club 2, where Chuck Palindrome writes a thing. And his thing gets utterly misinterpreted and misused and abused. And then he's like, I don't know what to do now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid to put something else out there because you idiots will just fuck it up like you did my last thing.
Yeah.
So when I look at Doomsday Clock, it's hard for me to read it and not think of how abused Alan Moore is in all of this.
Yeah. This is a very... Tell me about the metaverse, Mark Radulich.
That's brilliant, by the way. The multiverse and the metaverse,
which
we first saw the metaverse in Fight Club 2.
Yes, we did. Holy shit, did we ever. There's stuff here that I feel that Geoff Johns is saying and using to support DC Comics owning and basically being the company that's publishing this story. Okay. You know, I think as a company, DC wants to show you that the reason Superman exists, if you look at Watchmen, well, yes, But if you look at Watchmen, Watchmen is a very good statement as to why a Superman should not exist.
Yeah.
And what would happen, you know, what are some of the stuff that could potentially happen if one does?
Here's what I said last night. I'm sorry, but here's what I said last night. So Alan Moore wrote The Watchmen. It got abused. You know, years later, we have Doomsday Clock. But in between, and most recently, we have yet another person, Garth Ennis, making a statement about the dark side of
Grimdark.
The grim dark side of Superman with The Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And how people with ungodly powers will become, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, that sort of thing. So even though Alan Moore's creations have been abused, there are still people out there making those statements and keep coming back to it because it's a strong point of view.
Sure. Number one, Alan Moore created what he created for DC Comics back in the 80s, one of the big two companies out there. Now, this was obviously before the creation of Image Comics, the big push for creator rights, blah, blah, blah. And then if you compare that with Garth Ennis, he doesn't have the overshadowing of DC Comics. You know, you have the Watchmen universe, which is set in a different universe, and Alan Moore did some great things with it. Problem is that it's DC Comics. They're the ones that own that outright now. Hence why we're getting all the Watchmen showing up in the DC universe. The Boys, that is solely Garth Ennis's thing. Alan Moore left DC Comics. He left comics. So all in all, if we're talking the metaverse, Mark Radulich, DC Comics owns, you know, Watchmen outright, so they can do whatever they want to with them and use what abuse his vision, if you will. It all comes back to the fact that he is using characters that weren't his own in the first place. Long story short, his creation is DC's to abuse.
You can make the argument it's no more abuse than what Disney's done with Lucasfilm. With the intention of giving the fans more stuff from that universe. So I don't think anyone like sat around the table like, hey, you know who we haven't fucked with in a while? Alan Moore.
No, I know that's not what's going on here. I think is DC is saying, well, we have these properties. We have Watchmen. Oh, you know, that's made a lot of money. Let's tell a good story. Let's tell a positive story.
I can almost guarantee you how this started. Somebody was like, we have these Watchmen characters. What should we do with them? You know what would be a fun face-off? Superman and Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, guaranteed.
Okay, so that's our starting point. How do we get to Superman versus Dr. Manhattan? And they constructed the story around it. And a lot of it worked. I'm not saying it doesn't. You know, I was saying the good, the bad, and the ugly with this is that, you know, the good is that I think there are a lot of really good fan-friendly ideas here. A lot of really positive ideas. I don't want to denigrate the book entirely. But I think the bad is that it does get convoluted at times. It feels a little disjointed. It feels like there were two editorial narratives going on with this book. Like it started in one direction, and then I kind of think it veers off into another direction. It doesn't feel as cohesive as I think it could have. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but to me, it felt like there was probably another direction initially. And in the 2 years it took to get this book out there, they were like, we got to go in a different direction with this.
So. Yeah, well, you know what? You're probably right. I mean,
I honestly wish it was an Elseworlds tale. I wish this was like Red Sun or Gotham by Gaslight, which in a world not unlike our own, we have the superheroes that are 2 minutes to midnight, and oh, look, it's the Watchmen.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
as opposed to starting to jury-rig this into the current continuity.
You know, we'll find out, you know, if next month or 2020, Rorschach and the Question shows up on shelves. There's your local comic store. You know, my final thoughts, just real quick, you know, I hear a lot of what you're saying there. You know, I think this is probably one of the best ways, one of the better stories that I think that they can come up with to try and put these two properties together and tell a story. And I think there's a lot of elements going into this to kind of show you, hey, look, this is the DC universe now. We are the ones that are kind of in control. And what better way?
We are in control.
What better way to send Dr. Manhattan, who is a very tragic character, back to his own universe with a happy ending? Everybody gets kind of a happy ending here. I had a good time with Doomsday Clock. There were definite enjoyable moments through it, and I thought it was a decent story to bring the two properties together. Mark Radulich, you said it was a thing.
You know me. I'm a simple man with simple needs. I like Ma Nucci.
Yes,
I like
I do too.
I like my stories a little bit more straightforward than this one. I mean, it was fine. It was no Dark Side War. So
let's get into plugs. This brings our discussion of Doomsday Clock to a close. We had a good time reading it. Mark Radulich, what do we got coming up on the Radulich in Broadcasting Network?
Last week, myself and Pat Mullen reviewed Fuller House Season 5, Part 1. Jesse and I did our year-end review on the Metal Hammer of Doom. And Sean Comer and I did an on-trial for Fight Club. We also dropped our third chapter of The Long Strange Trip Through Heavyweight Boxing with Joe Lewis. And myself and Pat Mullen did coverage for ICW New York No Holds Barred. Tomorrow, Alexis Haina and I will do a TV party for Watchmen from HBO, which was fantastic. We'll have Pat Mullen on to do some 80s Kiss on the Metal Hammer of Doom. And that's going to be it for the week. We'll have some boxing coverage for you on Saturday. It'll either be the Mungia versus O'Sullivan fight or Jesse Hart versus Joe Smith, whichever one John War wants to do. We've got NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool 2 coming at you on the 12th. And then we've got just a whole bunch of shows the following week. We've got Star Wars Blood Ties. We've got Crisis on Infinite Earth, both the comic and the show. We'll have a Damn You Hollywood for 1917. We'll have a TV party for The Mandalorian. And that's it for that week. I'm done talking now.
All right. I'm ready to go to bed. So that's Mark Radulich. I am Jesse Starcher. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for joining us. Make sure to give that Radulich in Broadcasting Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts we have to offer. We are at home on Spreaker, but you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and recently we have hit the air on Spotify. Find your favorite podcast platform and type in RADULICH to subscribe for some great content. If you enjoyed this show, please feel free to share and spread the word. And as always, we appreciate any feedback and look forward to entertaining you again soon.
I was like, motherfucker, I about had enough of your shit.
Start this fucking podcast before I go to bed. I'm on my own doomsday clock.
2 minutes to sleepy time.
It's because you know that it's not appropriate to show a man in blue with Specker out.
Watchmen, V for Vendetta.
Rorschach in question should have become the new tag team champions in the WWE.
Oh my goodness, the hooded.
Rorschach and the question are Mr. Wrestling 1 and 2.
I'm exhausted already. I don't know if I can continue.
As Iron Maiden once said.
Hey, they did. Yeah, they said it.
Yes, they also said The Trooper and Fear of the Dark.
They also said Run to the Hills, didn't they?
They also said Ace is High. I could do this all day.
What else did Iron Maiden say?
Gender fluidia. New superhero. Do you know what a Jellicle cat is? A Jellicle cat just Jellicle things.
Jellicle?
Yes.
That's not even a word. Jellicle.
It is in cats, sir.
All right, then. I don't know how Dr. Manhattan pulled this off, but Cats takes over at issue 11.
I wish. Doomsday Clock would have been so much better had the solution to all of their problems been Jellicle cats.
You know, it was hard to even know what the fuck happened because there was so much time in between issues. So I think you could have really easily got away with just making a whole Cats issue and nobody would have fucking knew.
Perfect.
Pretty much all by him lonesome. By him lonesome. I'm fucking five, ladies and gentlemen. He's by him lonesome. He's like he's like a scientist just messing with an experiment.
He was a scientist.
Okay. He is a scientist. who happens to be blue and naked at the same time.
I just have a feeling that Alan Moore kind of looks back at his comic book career and thinks and wonders if it's too late to join ISIS.
I think it's about time to wrap this up before it goes
big
off.
Blue cock, Jesse. Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
You know what I didn't get to do tonight was my fucking look at this photograph joke. Damn it.
Nope, that all happened last week. Fuck me.